What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 309, 86 degrees and smoggy outside. We'll talk about the air quality in a minute on this Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. How's everybody doing today? We got through Monday. Tuesday's going to be a cakewalk, so all we have to worry about is Wednesday now, right? And then it's all downhill from there. Hope your day's going nice. It was a nice day outside, despite the smog and the haze. Started to get to me last evening. I felt it, and I really don't. I'm not sensitive to bad air or anything like that, but I did start feeling it yesterday to the point where I almost didn't feel good. So I went inside, limited my time outside. But this is crazy. And just the past couple of years, I mean, are we just more hyper aware of it now? But it seems like Canada has been burning for the past couple of years, and we've been dealing with the residual. I don't remember hazy, smoky skies with the air quality being such a worry for us here, especially in Northeast Pennsylvania. But it seems to be an ongoing thing now for at least the past two or three summers. So I wonder, what has changed? How does Canada keep burning year after year? I thought, and the news report stated that, when those massive wildfires burn through, there wouldn't be much fuel in future years, so it would be less and less. And it seems like we're dealing with the same thing. It's pretty nasty outside. When I was driving home through the valley yesterday, it didn't look nice. You could barely see the mountains on the other side of the valley. By us now, it looks like Scranton's showing about 116. 116 is above the sensitive group level. It's 101 to 150 is the sensitive group, unhealthy for sensitive groups. There are no unhealthy period 151 to 200 readings in our area. Just north of us in Susquehanna County, we have 110. So we have 116 in Scranton. We have 110 up in Susquehanna County. In Wyoming County, we have 120. Just north of us, where yesterday it was in the red, just pure unhealthy, it's at 127 today. But there are more in the yellow, which is moderate, and not much good air around us in Northeast Pennsylvania. Matter of fact, you have to start traveling to central PA out west, the Allegheny Mountains, or down by State College. Seems to be the only place you're getting in the green, good air. So if you're sensitive to this, and again, maybe it was just in my head because I was visually seeing it and recognize it and thinking about it. But by the time I got home yesterday, it just didn't feel that good. So I barely ate any dinner and kind of crashed out early, and that was the end of it. So hopefully we don't have to deal with this much longer, but we are under that alert again. They were hoping it was going to be out of our area by yesterday. If I scan a bigger area, up north of us, actually is a little better. So it seems to be a cluster from Chicago to Milwaukee, from Chicago to Milwaukee, across Detroit, all the way to us, and out east to the Boston area. That seems to be where it's affecting us most. So it has drifted down. It looks like above there in Canada, they're in the greens and yellows. So hopefully it gets better for us. But that's just something else we need to be concerned about. There was another earthquake. We talked about this just yesterday. And I said, is there something going on that we don't know about that they're keeping from us? We had that major Western Russia earthquake of an 8.8, and it kind of sent shockwaves across the entire globe. We've had two now long dormant volcanoes start to erupt again. And now in New Jersey, in just the past week, we've had two earthquakes, a 3.0 or a 3.3, and now a 2.7 just today. So just something to keep an eye on. I don't know, just nature doing its thing, or is there something more going on that we should be concerned about? So that's why we ask the questions. Lackawanna County has received about 4,200 reassessment appeal hearings that have already begun. I would imagine they're going to peel through them quicker. It appears that the assessment office is very happy with the less numbers. They were expecting more than double that. I'm surprised it's only 4,200. And they say, oh, it was because of their informal appeals, they believe that there's so less because it handled a lot of the problems. First of all, I don't know much of any person who had much of anything handled during the informal appeal unless they were totally wrong with the property, the size of it, or different pictures, or they weren't even looking at the same property. And how has that happened? But there's a lot of people that aren't happy with the transparency of this entire process, the fact that we don't know the formula, that school districts, almost every school district in Lackawanna County, with I believe minus two, have risen their school taxes because not only don't they have a state budget, but they don't know what this formula is going to be that they're going to base their taxes off of. So there's a whole lot of things to deal with moving forward. And I've spoken to people on school boards that say, you know, and township, you know, they're all left in the dark about this process. Sometime in November, I guess, there'll be a solid number. And then at that point, we will know our tax rates and the formula that will bring that out. And I think that's when a lot of residents, including myself, will get that shock value. And I've said it, and I'm going to continue to say it till I get commitment from the people who are going to certify this reassessment, which would be the county commissioners, that we've been told from the start that a third will see their taxes lessen, a third will stay the same, and a third will go up. I want the exact percentages of that number. I don't want to know whose went up and whose went down and who stayed the same. I just want to know the percentage of whose went down, what's the percentage of who stayed the same and what's the percentage? To see if they were upfront with us from the beginning. Because if that's way out of whack, then you lied to us from the start. And then I think you have a greater issue of a split government because we only have two county commissioners now, Republican and a Democrat. And if they don't agree on this is not moving forward. If they don't start working on a budget in unison, it is not moving forward. You have the Commissioner Bill Gaughan, after two courts have told him he does not have the authority to move forward or initiate a lawsuit, continuing to appeal a lawsuit that he didn't have the ability to initiate to begin with, which is just continuing to delay business as usual. And that will include, and more importantly, coming forward, the certification of the reassessment, which needs to be done before it can be instituted, or a budget, which you would think that the two sides would be sitting down now saying, hey, let's start working on this together so we don't reach a stalemate. Early signs are indicating that the county, even after a 33% tax increase, even after more debt taking on and readjustment of debt, refinancing of debt, is not in a very good financial shape. So that's not good news for Lackawanna County taxpayer. Which I am one of. So we'll see how these 42 reassessment appeals get handled. They did hire auxiliary boards. If they get through this faster, I would assume that means they would have to pay them less because there would be less cases for them to hear. Hopefully they're using them to get through this. So we can get to the next step, because the next step I think is going to be the most shocking for us, the residents, the people of Lackawanna County, to actually see that formula and see how much dollars your taxes are going to go up, stay the same, or go down. We need to really see that. And it's interesting that they chose not to give us an estimate on that number, where other counties did give that. They sent out notices like we got that said, here's your estimated taxes. It is subject to change based on appeals. And I think as adults, we can figure that out. And the fact that they didn't want to send us out wrong numbers. Well, when you say it's an estimate and this is only an estimate and it is going to change, let us make the decision there. But I think they darn well knew that if they did send us out a number that we can actually look at and say, whoa, my taxes are going up that much in dollars and cents, oh, I have to appeal this because there's no way I could survive that. You know, telling you what your house mysteriously could be worth, which again is taxing your property on unrealized capital gains, but through property assessments, it is allowed. But when you look at what your houses, what the comparable houses around you have sold for, in reality, is it the same? And that's what your house should be taxed at. And I'm all for people paying what their houses should be worth. But there's a reason why California, one of the, I mean, the liberal stronghold of the United States when it comes to taxes and public spending and progressive government, because counties, because municipalities, because school districts abused the reassessment tax system, they had to pass a law in California, Proposition 1 at the time, that states that your property tax has to be based off the sale of your house, the price of your house when it sells, and cannot change until the next time it sells. Because counties abused it and started banging people over the head with extraordinary taxes. So the state had to step in and say, enough's enough. If your house sells for $300,000, that's your assessed value till it sells again. That's not a bad system, because anytime a house sells, and houses in our area do sell. You know, I bought my house 22 years ago. A lot of you bought your houses. Some of you are still in your house and should benefit for being in your house 30, 40, 50, 60 years. You should reap the benefits of that. Being a stable member of the community, a tax-paying county resident. Not be raked over the coals to where you worked your whole life for 60 years and now you have your nest egg, you're working on a fixed income, Social Security or whatever that may be, whatever savings you were able to put together trying to raise a family, and now they're going to start raising your taxes hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. Hopefully, some of you are the ones that stay the same or get lessened. But without some sort of program, some sort of plan to help those people who are on a fixed income, I would say under $20,000, there's going to be a lot of people in bad shape in our area. So it's going to be interesting to see where this moves on from here. If it does move on, again, with the childish behavior that's going on in county government to not have a full contingency of our county commissioners, does this even move forward? Was it just a waste of taxpayer dollars because it can't move forward because people don't know how to play nice with each other? I guess we'll see. Or be 100% honest with the taxpayer from the start and transparent, because this was not that. I have a pretty robust surveillance system around my house, and at no time did I ever see the reassessment people, Tyler Technologies, at my property. And the picture they took was from a long distance away from the road. So they had to have gotten the information off of public record data and not any measurements or not anything they actually did. And I know there's a lot of other people who are in the same boat with that. It's 3:22 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 3:25, 86 degrees on August 5th. A texter texted in to me about gave me a link to a map where you can see all the active fires and smoke across the North America, pretty much. And that was coming from Joe from Wilkes-Barre. I pulled it up and there are two active fires. There's really not many, especially in the Northeast. There are two active fires in Pennsylvania. Looks like one in Massachusetts, one in Connecticut, and one in Rhode Island. The one in Pennsylvania is down just south of Hazleton. Looks in the Catawissa Recreational Area. And again, that's just as per this map. And there's another one out by Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Ohio, there's one. Toledo, there's one. West Virginia has one. Virginia has two. So there's really not many. But if you go up to Canada, just north of us, there's not a lot. But Manitoba area in Canada seems to be where the majority, Saskatchewan and Manitoba, and some in Western Ontario, are where the majority of fires and smoke are originating from. Quebec actually doesn't have an active fire right now, again, as per this map. And Ontario, most of the east of Ontario above the Great Lakes does not have any fires. There are some through Arkansas, Oklahoma, down north, Texas, Kansas. But other than that, there's really not that many active fires across the United States. Cuba actually is on fire more than Florida. So you can check these out. And these things are good to look at and get an idea of what's happening here. Something else in our area is the state Senate will be holding a data center hearing at Valley View High School. And this will take place August 11th at 1 p.m. at the Valley View High School Auditorium, 1 Columbus Drive in Archbold. State Senator Rosemary Brown will be there. She said in a news release on Monday, the three-hour hearing will include a panel composed of local officials, representatives from business and labor interests in the energy sector, conservationists, and economic developers, according to the announcement. Senator Dave Argall will also be there. So if you're looking, I was at an event actually with Senator Rosemary Brown on Saturday, this past Saturday. And while we were in, it was in Covington, I did see a couple of lawn signs. No data centers with the big, stop sign on it. So I know there's a couple proposed for that area. But if you're looking to find out more, this public hearing, again, will be held on August 11th at 1 p.m. at Valley View Auditorium. So I'm sure you could just check with Senator Rosemary Brown's office for more details. But the three-hour hearing will include a panel composed of local officials, representatives, business and labor interests, energy sector, conservationists, and economic developers, according to the announcement. The hearing will provide a critical opportunity for local government, state officials, and the public to come together and explore the facts surrounding data center development, as per the statement. So if it's one going to be in your area, and they're talking about a few in the valley, I know they've been talking about a conglomerate of them in the Covington, Clifton, and area of southern Lackawanna County, northern Monroe County. So if you want to partake and get some information for yourself, this would be a great opportunity to do that. A three-hour meeting, it looks like, is going to be pretty in-depth with all hands on deck to answer questions. It appears there will be a question and answer period through this.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
And if I can pull up the newsletter from Rosemary Brown's office, maybe I'll try and get that on my social media so you could check it out. But again, this policy committee meeting to host a public hearing on the data center development will take place August 11th, 1 p.m., Valley View High School Auditorium, 1 Columbus Drive in Archbold. And that's from an announcement coming from State Senator Rosemary Brown. So a good opportunity to hear the facts and what exactly this will mean for us, what kind of impact it will have on our local power infrastructure. Will it make our power infrastructure more stable? Will it make it more robust so we benefit from the fact that there are these entities here? What will the job creation be like? What are they predicting the impact of the people who work there and build these facilities on the local community as far as the economic development? You know, how would it help our local businesses, our restaurants, our hotel industry, buying homes? How many people would it bring in? Will it train local people? So it's a great idea to get all that hashed out, to answer the questions of the community. I mean, there are going to be people, and we all know them, that don't want anything in their backyard. It's as simple as that. They don't care what it is. They're all for these things, just not in their backyard. So then where? Where do we put them? And we have a lot of area in open space in our area. I mean, I know the one area up in Archbold near Valley View High School that they're talking about is pretty much a junkyard and a trailer park. Does that make the area better? In my opinion, it does. But does it put a strain on the area as well? The two-lane roads that would go to it, does it back up traffic depending on how many people are going to be there? If there's construction vehicles going back and forth? I mean, we saw the toll that the gas industry took on some of our rural roads in northern Pennsylvania, especially on the Route 6 area going across. So something we'll have to keep an eye on, but August 11th at 1 p.m. at Valley View High School will be your chance to, one of your chances to listen and be heard. It's 3:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 3:36, 86 degrees out there. Let me go to the phone now. We have Judy on an event that's coming up. Judy, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, what do you got going on?
How are you, Rob?
Good.
On Sunday this week, this coming Sunday, the Lackawanna County Republican Women, or the Marjorie Scranton Republican Women, is having their summer brunch. And it will be at Glenmara Country Club from 11 until 2. We're honoring Robin Medeiros and Kristen Nash. Stacey Garrity will be our speaker. Rosemary Brown will be there. Congressman Muser will be there. We're going to have a fun party.
All right, and this is going to be at Glenmore from 11 to 2 this Sunday, huh?
Yes. The tickets are $40 a piece or 2 for $75. You can buy them at the door. You'll need the ticket because we're having a door prize drawing, and your ticket stub will be the number that goes into the bag for the drawing.
Okay, great organizations, also, Lackawanna County GOP Women's, this brunch. It's always a good time.
And anybody that has questions can call me at 570-280-4370, or they can call the GOP office. That number is 570-346-7729.
All right, Judy. Sounds like a great event. Stacey Garrity is going to be there, Senator Rosemary Brown, Congressman Dan Muser. I mean, I just saw two of them this past weekend, and they had a lot to say, and it was great hearing from them and seeing them. I'm sure this is going to be an outstanding event on Sunday for you.
I hope so. We're excited about it, and it's finally here, and you know, we've been planning for months, and so I hope that lots of people turn out.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what, Judy, why don't you call me back on Thursday, and we'll give people a reminder just then, too, as well, if you can.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try to remember that.
I appreciate you calling. I have the information anyway, but I'd like it to come from you.
Okay. Yep. All right.
All right, Judy.
Thanks
for letting us know about this. It sounds like a great event.
I hope that people will come.
I'm sure they will. All right, Judy, thank you. It does sound like a great event. I just saw an article that was posted that the enforcement of unpaid parking tickets has begun with the Windshield Barnacles in the city of Scranton, the downtown parking area. It's causing quite a stir down there. And I did look at the legal authority that the city of Scranton does have to do this. Yes, you should be paying your parking tickets if you get parking. Yes, you should be paying your parking. I understand the fiasco that the parking situation in Scranton has been and the history of it. I get it. But it's not really a lot of money to park when you compare it to other places. You should be parking. There are a few things, though. Systems like this, especially the Barnacle, the Boots, and such like that, there are a lot of elderly or people that just don't have the technological resources to deal with it if their car is ever barnacled. There are a lot of people in our area. We keep talking about the need for hospitals in our area and the medical field in our area because we have an aging community. You know, what if you have someone who has, you know, medical issues? needs their car, and now you're putting a barnacle across the windshield, which is basically like a big yellow book that sticks to your windshield, so you can't use your car or see out unless you drive like Ace Ventura and stick your head out the window. And I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that is a workaround. But there are a couple reasons how they can do this based on their ordinance. If you have one or more outstanding citations involving ADA parking, again, if you're not ADA certified, have a handicap placard, you should not be parking in those spots. You should be leaving them for them. Three or more unpaid parking citations. And here's the one that gets me, and I talked about this when this first came around. Unregistered vehicles or those lacking a valid license plate. Well, here's the thing. Our parking enforcement is filtered through, well, Scranton's parking enforcement is filtered through Park Scranton, operated by Grow America, formerly National Development Council, a private entity, a 501c3 that does this. How do they have access to state registration data? To see if your vehicle is registered or not registered or your license plate is not valid? How do they have access to that data? Now, I understand, based on your license plate and past tickets, they could create a database that's theirs that says, all right, these cars have been given citations. This is the license plate that have been given these citations. You have three or more. We're going to put a barnacle on there. They could do the same thing with citations for ADA parking. If you do not have a handicap placard, you park in a handicap spot, they can cite you. They do have the authority to do that under their ordinance in City Code, Chapter 439 of the City Code. But how does a private entity like Grow America or the Scranton Parking Authority, its designee, and whatever they call themselves these days, how do they have access to state registration data to see if your car is properly registered or not? That's a question and that's an issue because they shouldn't. They're not law enforcement. They're not even code enforcement. They're a private entity that's contracted by the city to manage its parking. And manage its parking via the ordinance does say that they can implement fines and immobilization devices because they are working as the city's agency. But how are these private entities, how are these people vetted that to get these positions, to have state registration to see if your registration is valid or current? Lots of concerns there. It's 3:43 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. Got a text message. Hey, Rob, my concern was with the amount of electricity these data centers will use. Will it create shortages and therefore cause rates to increase? By the electric suppliers. Well, I know that's a concern in places where major hospitals have been built, major medical centers, but it actually made their electrical grid more robust and more stable. If you live on a hospital grid in a lot of places, I know it was the case where I was working down in Virginia in the contract. Our facility was on the same as a hospital that was about a mile up the road from us. And when the power went out around us, it rarely went out at our place because the hospital had a hardened power supply grid, and anyone in that grid benefited from it. So I would imagine the data centers, with the amount of power that they need to bring into it, and it is going to be substantial, they also have to account for that. That's why a lot of them are looking to build their own power supply plants, which would, I guess, then take the drain off the public systems if they do have their own power supply, which has been talked about in a lot of these places. So that would possibly drive down the cost because there wouldn't be as much demand for the normal households in the area. Let's go to the phone now. We have Lorraine from Hazleton on fires and air quality. You're one of the people I think about when I see this air and this haze in the air. Lorraine, how you doing?
I've seen better days, but I just wanted to tell you, back in 2022, it was terrible. Terrible in Hazleton here. I was in a hospital, so that's why I remember distinctly. Some people say, "Well, Lorraine, you're better off there." I don't know about what I went through. I wasn't better off, but maybe in a way. You should have seen it. It was like red fog orange. I mean, this is nothing compared to that. I mean, you could not see across the street. I was in the rehab room, and it was like all glass, big, you know, the big windows, and you could see out on the main street, and like the priest, our priest would say, Lorraine, when he'd walk from the rectory right over to the church, which was just a couple of steps away, his eyes were burning him so bad. I'll tell you, it was like you couldn't see in front of you. It was very, very scary and ominous. And I believe even the hospital, I don't know, they were doing something to the vents outside to try to block it from coming in the hospital. So that was scary.
Yeah, it's not as bad. I don't smell the smoke like I did last year when the sky was orange as well. This year, it's just a haze. It's just a fog that we're seeing. No, I haven't picked up any bad smell. But again, my smell is pretty horrible and destroyed to begin with because of the things I've dealt with. I'm glad you're doing okay with it, though. And it isn't as bad for people like you and people like me. So,
that was really bad.
It is indeed. I'm coming up on the Bloomberg Money Minute, Lorraine, but I appreciate hearing from you again. Hopefully it goes away soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. It's coming up on 3:50 here, time for the Bloomberg Money. We're back with the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio, coming up on the 4 o'clock hour here, 86 degrees, 3:53. So, I often look at whatever breaking news or what stories are being published in our media. And again, another one out of China that does not look good. Severe outbreak. Once you hear that and China in the same headline, it raises my concerns and anxiety level. Severe outbreak of a mosquito-borne chikungunya virus infects 8,000 in China. Thousands of people have been infected with a painful mosquito-borne virus in China, prompting a response not seen since COVID, including a plan to release even larger mosquitoes and fish to eat the ones spreading the disease. What could possibly go wrong there? The virus has rapidly spread to about 8,000 patients in just 4 weeks, mainly across China's Guangdong province to the south, with the city of Foshan being hit the hardest, according to the New York Times. But Hong Kong's first case was confirmed Monday, and the increasing worrisome situation is stoking fears of a potential pandemic that would require strict restrictions. Doesn't sound good, right? In a massive effort to curb further spread, masked Chinese soldiers have been dousing public spaces with insecticide, and authorities have begun releasing elephant mosquitoes whose larvae devour the smaller viruses carrying mosquitoes. Thousands of mosquito-eating fish have also been released into Foshan's public ponds. This is not spread between humans, but is transmitted by bites of affected mosquitoes. While it's typically not deadly, there is no known cure, and the virus symptoms can be agonizing and include fever, joint pain, headache, muscles pain, swelling, and rash. Sounds a lot like Lyme disease now, doesn't it? According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, officials in China said 95% of the patients hospitalized with the virus have been discharged within 7 days, but the infection rate has the region on high alert, with 3,000 cases reported in the area just in the past week alone, according to the BBC. The swift response by the Chinese government has its citizens online comparing the outbreak to the COVID-19 pandemic, which exploded in 2020 and killed millions of people. U.S. officials claim the coronavirus was accidentally released from a Chinese laboratory. Got in a lot of trouble for saying that at one point. China imposed some of the strictest restrictions in the world at the time, including major lockdowns, forcing testing, and social distancing rules. Well, then how the hell it get here? In Guangdong, authorities have vowed to take decisive and forceful measures to halt the spread of the disease, which is not commonly found far north as in China. Infected residents are being sent to quarantine wards where they are placed in beds covered with mosquito nets. Now, here's the thing. Why are they doing that if they said it doesn't spread person to person? They just said the only way you get it is from a bite from a mosquito. But yet they're taking infected residents and they're being sent to quarantine wards. Have to ask yourself why. You know why? Because they don't know. That's why. They're being precautious. But in the meantime, are saying, don't worry about anything. You only get this from a mosquito bite. You cannot get this from anyone else. But we're going to lock you in a room and put you in a mosquito net. Officials have urged those showing any symptoms to be tested for the virus, and residents have been ordered to remove stagnant water where mosquitoes breed from their homes and threatened with fines of $1,400 if they refuse to comply, according to the BBC. At least five homes have had their electricity cut for not cooperating, the Times reported. You don't want to cooperate? We're cutting the power to your house. Professor at the University of Hong Kong studying the impact of this virus told the paper that infected mosquitoes can spread and reproduce in even the smallest pool of water, like a Coke bottle cap. The CDC issued a level 2 travel notice for those going to China as the disease continues to spread. Level 2 tells travelers to practice enhanced precautions, is on a warning scale of 4, with 4 urging people to avoid all travel to the region. The agency has urged American traveling there to get vaccinated for the disease. There are 2 vaccines approved for use against it in the U.S. Well, that's just warm and fuzzy inside of me. And listen, these travel advisories are nothing crazy. When I traveled to South America, we had to take malaria precautions because malaria was in the area and you just had to take a dose to prevent you from getting malaria. So there was medicine that you could take. And it was interesting because you go to your local doctor who's not used to that and they have to look it up. And they ended up calling the CDC to figure out what they even needed to put you on. But any travel website, any advisory said, hey, you need to take some sort of precaution if you're going to the rainforests of South America because there is malaria. So there were no ill side effects. It was a couple of horse pills you took each day, and it prevented you from getting malaria. So, but it appears here they don't even know what they're dealing with because on one hand they're telling you, well, you don't get this from a person. It doesn't travel person to person. You can't. It's not contagious. But we're going to isolate anyone who gets it, which leads me to believe they really don't know exactly. Now, we have our own problems here with West Nile, with our own standing water and mosquito issues. It has been found here in Lackawanna County, West Nile, not this. So it's nothing unusual, but the fact that it's spreading so fast, the fact that it is concerning them, and the fact that they contradict themselves in their own precautions, that it's, you can't get it from person to person, but we're quarantining you, again, doesn't make me feel all warm and fuzzy. It's coming up on 4 o'clock here at WILK.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.